The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
We're in a period of rapid change, and sometimes it can feel like things are spinning out of control. With political tensions, anxiety, and loneliness rising, and questions about how to live a good life on everyone's mind, finding answers can seem harder than ever. For millennia, spiritual thinkers have offered wisdom and tools to help people find their way in trying times, advice that even a scientist like me, Dave DeSteno, is finding have a lot to offer. To join the conversation, look for How God Works wherever you listen to podcasts.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. Working hundreds of matches over the years, it ain't no surprise that my body's taking its share of bumps and bruises. Well, my buddy Diamond Dallas Page knows all about the wear and tear the ring takes on your body, and his DDP Yoga fitness system was specifically designed to burn fat, reduce pain, and heal up from injuries. And I got a whole list of them. Dallas is so positive that you will absolutely love the DDPY program and using the DDPY app. He's doing something he ain't never done before. He's going to give you 7 days free to try it out. That's a week to try the program, explore the app, and own your life, and it's completely free. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It's a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, all with minimal joint impact. Just for listening to the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app off any DVD pack. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. Hey, check this out. Dallas will be at the Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan. He'll be appearing all 3 days, Friday through Sunday, May 18th, 19th, and 20th. Come down, get an autograph, take a picture, meet and interact with Dallas at the Motor City Comic Con. You can get details and ticket info at MotorCityComicCon.com. And for those of you in the UK, you can catch DDP in person at the Wales Comic Con April 21st and April 22nd. Details and tickets are at WalesComicCon.com.
The following program is a Podcast1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street trying to cut it open to this podcast, and I hope you will bear with me today. For some reason, somehow, some way, the toughest SOB in the history of the WWE has gotten himself a hell of a damn cold. Scratchy throat, nose running, achy, feel like garbage. Nonetheless, I got to open up a can of audio whoop-ass for you, and I do. Because my guest on today's podcast is none other than the franchise, Shane Douglas. Shane came by my booth at the WrestleCon the other day, and we got a chance to just say hello to each other and catch up and said, hey, man, let's shoot the breeze and talk about the business on the podcast. So that's what we're here to do today. And I'm going to keep this open semi-short because I'm struggling with this voice. Don't get me wrong. I ain't selling. I ain't a sissy. There's no sense in just trying to struggle to get all this stuff out. Good time talking to Shane. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. We talk about pretty much every aspect of the business, from his days coming up, talking a little bit about today's current scene, and just life in general. I've always enjoyed talking to Shane, and it'd be nice one of these days to just sit down in person with him and shoot the breeze. I think you'll enjoy today's podcast before we kick into that. And one more time, I want to say thank you to everybody that came by my booth at the WrestleCon convention. I had a really good time being there, man. And Shane Helms and his girlfriend or fiance or wife, Karen, holy smokes, and the Boogeyman, and a couple of other people. Man, we had an outstanding time, and way too many margaritas that one night and way too many fireball shots that next night. And it was nice to hang out with Kenny Omega and meet Pentagon and Phoenix and all that other stuff. But, man, I just had a good time, and I was kind of reflecting about the past few days when all this cold started setting in. I was like, man, maybe I pick this up in New Orleans. But anyway, I'm live and well here at 317 Gimmick Street, and my conversation starts now with the franchise, Shane Douglas. But before we get to Shane Douglas, here's some words from our sponsor. Flap. Pustule. Jowls. Nugget. Gurgle. Smear. Curd. Bulbous. Tender. Dongle. Pork. Moist. Hey, whether you're a construction worker, warehouse worker, or even a podcast host, if you hear certain words on a job site, it can make work uncomfortable. So at least get work gear that is comfortable. Timberland Pro. Work shirts, pants, and boots. Head to toe. Timberland Pro. Not uncomfortable.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at PodcastOne.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm rolling sound. I'm over here at 317 Gimmick Street. God dang, I'm damn near sick as a dog. I ran into the franchise Shane Douglas over at WrestleCon this past weekend in New Orleans, Louisiana. The event was WrestleMania 34, and I had a damn good time. And Shane stopped by my line and said hello, and we got a chance to start talking. And there was a line a mile long, so we didn't get a chance to talk that long. So we figured, hey, man, let's catch up on a podcast and connect and see what each other's up to. God dang, Shane, welcome back to the show. How are you? It was good seeing you this past weekend, man. I was glad you came by.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't know you were still there. I knew you were there the day before, and I didn't know you'd stuck around for the second day, and I heard a couple of fans talking, so I said, come on, I gotta just say hello. And it was great seeing you. You look like you're... Somebody told me you're doing DDP's yoga.
Man, I've been meaning to start. He was supposed to come over like 2 weekends ago and download the app for me. That's how stupid I am with technology, Shane. I got to get him to download the app for me. And that's a little bit of an excuse. I'm not going to lie. I could probably download the app, or at least my wife could. But you know what? Tell you what, you looked like a million bucks the other day. And I'd kind of come off the... I was on a ketogenic diet. And man, I was kind of avoiding all carbs. And when you put carbs back in, you do a little bit of a rebound. So, you know, I'm still retaining some of the vascularity in my arm, but I put a little bit of the, my midsection is my weak area anyway. So, but along with just, you know, with just lifting weights, which I, you know, I love doing, and I'm kind of lifting medium heavy because I'll never train heavy again just because of all the beatings and the surgeries on both shoulders and stuff like that. But in talking with Dallas and to always talk about, talk to the guys that are 5 years ahead of me in the business or an age and 10 years ahead of me to kind of see where they're at. Man, right. I figure flexibility is kind of really, I still want to look good. I'd still like to be jacked. If I could put another inch on my arms, that'd be good. But I think, you know, realistically, would it happen? Probably not. So yeah, I have made the commitment to start DDP. It's just picking a hard date to start it. And I tell you what, you know, I talked to my stunt double over in Vancouver, Canada. Paul Azenby swears by it. Jericho swears by it. Every one of the boys I've talked to that has tried it swears by it. And so when my stunt double put it over double hard the last time I talked with him, and he's been doing it for a couple of years, I told him, I said, dude, straight up, shoot. He goes, I'm telling you. And so, dude, I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens. How's your lifting going? What are you doing to stay in shape? Are you watching what you're eating, or have you ever considered any form of yoga or that whole stretching ball of wax?
I never had thought about yoga until I keep hearing from Jericho and all the guys that are doing the DDP yoga, swearing by it and seeing the results. Jericho just had that match with Kenny Omega, and I thought he looked fantastic. You looked fantastic the other day. I thought it's best I'd seen you looking. To be honest, you and I hadn't seen each other in the same room for God years and years. But you looked fantastic, and I had heard that you were doing the yoga and thought you might be. I'd never considered it before. Mine always was circulated around being a smaller guy in the land of the giants as wrestling was then. I was always working to put weight on and size on, and now getting 54 years old, don't need to carry that kind of weight anymore. But about a year ago, Steve, I had a, it sounded like I'm telling a joke, but I'm serious. I'm walking to the mall with my kids, and I got this pain in my ass. And it was like, damn, it felt like a Charlie horse. And I thought, well, it'll go away for, you know, a few minutes, and it didn't. And the damn thing stuck with me about 7-8 months. I finally ended up going to get an MRI and getting things checked out, and had a few problems. I had to, you know, go to the chiropractor. Thank God, no surgery or anything. But I've been working on a lot of stuff like that, and the stretching that they had me doing seems to have helped. And I started doing a lot of interval biking with a recumbent bike, which is a godsend. I couldn't ride a regular bike and to kill my back. But that's been helping a lot. And that 8 months that I was off pretty much doing nothing, I started getting a little paunchier than I like to be. You know, so I started, you know, just recommitted myself to getting back in there and sort of working this out. My ideal is to get, my fighting weight was like always around 250, 253. I'd like to get down to like 215, 220. My doctor, the last time I was there, said, we'd like you to get down to like 185, 186. I said, well, we can do that. We just pop my legs off and we'll be there, you know?
Dude, when you said 215, I thought that was a little bit of a stretch, but damn sure 185, yeah. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, what are your thoughts from being in the business as long as you have, and you and I are almost damn near the same age, but it's, I don't know if it's an ego thing, if it's being one of the boys type thing, like you said, I wasn't the biggest guy in the world either, so you spend all this time trying to get your ass, you know, good enough or aesthetic enough or whatever you need to do to have a presence in the ring, keep yourself healthy. And that's what we did. We trained our asses off. We're not done yet. I mean, we still got plenty of good years ahead of us, but does it mess with your ego? I was watching a very interesting interview with, and I know you were into bodybuilding back in the day, with Dorian Yates. And Dorian said he's kind of done with all the heavy lifting because his body is beat up as well from all the heavy poundages. And he's like, you know, at the end of the day, who am I doing this for anymore? You know, I competed and I bodybuilt for a reason to attain the goals that I did. But now, who am I doing it for? And just for me in my head, I just feel like, you know, I got to look at least, I'm Steve Austin, but I got to look a little bit like Stone Cold Steve Austin because I guess that's who and what I am.
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question about it. It plays with your head, you know, especially because, you know, once you're after those years of doing the bodybuilding and working to get yourself to what you felt was a good look for you, and then, you know, now as you're getting older, you know, that's no longer realistic. And to be honest with you, I don't, you know, first of all, my joints wouldn't support me working out like I used to. You know, all the injuries that I've had in my joints, my elbows, shoulders, and stuff. But, you know, to me, I've put that part out of my head. It is, I'm never going to be a 400 or 500 pound bench presser again, and don't care to be. But as long as I can get in there and do 225 for 15 or 20 reps and, you know, just get a good sweat going and get my cardio up a little bit, that's where I really need to be and focus on, because I don't want to, last thing I want to do, Steve, is tear a joint or something like I've done in the past, you know, trying to be heavy in the gym and things. At this age, tearing a tricep tendon would be a lot more severe than it was when I was 35. So I just take it easy on that front. But my son is 17 years old now, so he does the same type of diet you just got off of. He does the low. He's been doing it for the last 2 years of his life, and I'm impressed as hell with him, because when I was 15, I couldn't have cut carbs out to save my life. You know, I'd have died if I didn't eat carbs. You know, so I'm hanging with him a little bit. He's, you know, he doesn't want to get big. He just wants to get tight, and he's achieving that. So, you know, it's a good modicum for me. He's not doing real heavy weights, so I can sort of hang with him. And it pushes me a little bit. It's cool hanging out there with your son, you know. So that, and then the recumbent bike and the interval biking has been fantastic for me. That's where I really notice the difference, where I get my cardio up and get a good sweat going. And then I do. Have you ever heard of this thing, whole body vibration?
Man, I've heard about it, but I don't know anything about it.
At first, it looked and sounded like a work, so I ignored it for a long time. Then I started doing some research on it. And, you know, the theory behind it is that all of your cells they're polarized. You have a negative and a positive end. And, you know, through all the stuff that we've done and throwing around and the banging around and, you know, the crappy diet on the road, et cetera, that those cells get out of alignment. And the philosophy is that when those cells get out of alignment, that leads to injury or, you know, health problems. And so the whole body vibration, just, you go in this thing for like 7-8 minutes and it shakes the hell out of you. And then you come off of it. It actually feels pretty good. You know, it's like almost like a quick massage. And you're supposed to realign those. I don't know if it's in my head or what, but I started doing that at the same time I started doing the interval biking. And I know the biking's doing the lion's share of it, but it seems like that whole body vibration, I feel a shitload better after I get out of there doing that. like I said, it feels like almost like a quick massage, you know. So, and you can find a lot of information on it online. And that's the reason I started buying into, like, you know, some people a lot smarter than me, some PhDs and stuff, talking about the efficacy of it. So I figured, hell, I'll give it a try.
Hey, man, when you signed up in the business, man, you were a young buck. And, you know, obviously you're always a pro wrestling fan, just like I was. And, you know, when you get in the business, the veterans will tell you, God dang it, kid, be careful out there, or you're taking too many bumps, or slow down is the number one thing, and they tell you to save your money. But they always tell you, you know about the bump card. You only got so many bumps on your damn card, and then, you know, you end up feeling like you do. These days, now when I look back, I mean, you know, dude, I'm in a pretty good place. I mean, my right arm doesn't straighten out. I've had my, you know, left and shoulder rebuilt, my left shoulder and my right shoulder rebuilt, ACL, PCL, and my, you know, left knee, tricep reattachment, C3-4 fusion. But, man, as far as a pain level, you know, I feel pretty damn decent. But other than that, I mean, if you start looking at the list of things that I did, I'm pretty much beat to shreds. At this day and age, you know, when you look back, did you know you were going to put yourself, you know, in all the bullshit that you, the bumps and the stuff, and the stuff that we do to try to entertain people and tell stories? Did you realize, or now that you're 53, 54, you look back and say, God dang, maybe I should have listened to some of those veterans?
Absolutely. Here's how, you know, young and dumb, right? You know, we were in phenomenal shape back in the day. You know, we ate pristine diets. We were working out. You know, you'd go out and take those bumps and get up the next day and felt great. Never even thought of it. In my head, I thought, well, you know, our nutrition's a lot better. We have a lot better workout techniques for keeping ourselves in a lot better shape than the guys at the generation before us did. And I always thought that would be our ace in the hole. And then you get a little bit closer to 50 and you realize that maybe they were, Terry Funk told me, one time he said, you'll hit a brick wall about 45. And he missed that by I was about 48 for me, when I started really noticing like a little bit slower step. And, you know, so I hit 45 and still felt pretty good. I thought, see, those guys were wrong then. But yeah, sure as hell, looking back now, you wish you could save some of those bumps like the old timers told us.
Hey, we were both at WrestleCon. We crossed paths, and I got a chance to see a lot of guys and got to go up to them and shake hands. And a lot of guys I just saw from afar. How was the whole WrestleCon experience for you? Because I hadn't done an appearance in I don't know how long. One of the reasons I went was because I love New Orleans, and it was pretty easy to get to. But also, you know, I wanted to finally make an appearance just to say hello and thank you to everybody that supported me. But also wanted to go just because I wanted to see a lot of guys and gals that I either crossed paths with or never met but was a fan of, and watched their work in the business. So I got a chance to do that and spend some time with Shane Helms and Boogeyman. And, man, we drank way too much one night. Got to sit around and talk with Kenny Omega for about 30 minutes while we were kind of on a little break, just shooting a breeze and just trading thoughts and not really talking about the business. And I got a chance to meet Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix, and two guys that I'm real, real big fan of from the Lucha Underground stuff and the Lucha Libre stuff that they do. So, man, I had a good time from that standpoint. How was it for you? You might have seen some of these people more than I have, but, I mean, was it cool for you to just make the rounds and see some familiar faces or meet people you didn't know?
Yeah, you know, it always is. Like, for us, I was liking it like a family reunion. You know, some of these guys you run across several times a year, and most of them you don't see for two or three or four years at a time. You know, so for me, like Bill Watts being there, for instance, having gotten my break in the UWF, to go over and talk, and I worked with him in WWF in 96 and WCW over the years. You know, although I hated it back then, I told him what I said to him, you know, first thing I said to him was, man, your ears should always be burning, Bill, because I'm always telling, invoking your name, saying, you know, Bill Watts taught me this. I learned this from Bill Watts. Bill Watts used to say, and he laughed and looked at me and said, well, it's about damn time you picked it up. And typical Bill Watts, but, you know, seeing all those guys that you don't see all the time, like I said, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, you and I haven't seen each other since I left WWF in 96, right?
That's damn sure about right.
Yeah, so, I mean, to think that many years had gone by, 22 years, I had seen you. We talked a couple times, but, you know, it's just too easy for that time to slip away. And so getting to those things like that and seeing a lot of those guys that you don't see, and then getting to meet some guys. Like, I've never met Kenny Omega. He's a great guy, a big fan of his work. You know, and that gives you a chance to sort of do that networking and that intermingling and seeing the guys you know, when I say the guys, the boys, I mean everybody, the guys, the men and the women, but, you know, just seeing the boys, it's always a great time for me to do that because, A, it's a lot easier than getting thrown around and thrown through tables and hit with chairs than it is sitting there signing an autograph or taking a picture. But to listen to the fans, that's the big takeaway for me, is you listen to the fans and realize that somebody watched this goofball for that long and follow the career that religiously and know it so inside and out. And I sent him an interview one time somewhere. I said, you know, it's, in the overall scheme of the cosmos, what we do is not very important. And I got right away, I started getting a ton of stuff on Twitter and Facebook saying, you don't sell yourself short, you guys entertained us, and you know, you allowed me to forget about my shitty boss or my shitty marriage or my shitty job or whatever. And I guess in that vein, you know, I guess we did play some minor role. And you know, the fact that, to me, as I always tell the fans, the fact that people remember you and I and Brian and Richie Steamboat wrestling all those years ago, it just amazes me. You know, as the wrestling mark that I am and have always been, that somebody even paid attention to me, that is amazing to me. And getting a chance to interact like at these conventions is a huge plus. And then on top of that, the icing on the cake is getting to see, like, seeing you and Jim, Bill Watson, the guys that I hadn't seen for so long. That to me is just like an old family reunion.
Yeah, but to me, I got to minimize, you know, what I did or what you did as well, just because I figured, like, hey, man, and I say this, you know, kind of in jest with you. I mean, we're just a couple of dumbasses out there having some wrestling matches in an 18 by 18 or 20 by 20, traveling around the world with our buddies, and we get a chance to make a living doing it. So I didn't really consider it that important. But like you said, to your point, when you're talking to those people, when they can live vicariously through your storylines, and, you know, it really did mean that much to them. And it's funny because, hell, I was just talking about the pay-per-view WrestleMania 34 on my podcast last Tuesday with Court Bauer, and I think I misquoted someone as having a title, and boy, immediately I get corrected. So, I mean, these wrestling fans are so passionate and so knowledgeable, and they know more about my career than I do because, I forgot half the stuff, including all the invasion angle. I mean, that's like a 2 or 3 year period where, you know, people can talk about it, and I'll shake my head and smile, but I don't really remember it. But going there this past weekend, it just kind of again validates, hey man, you know, I was having fun doing it and I got to live out my dream job, but people really got off and enjoyed, you know, watching the product, and they were able to escape from some of the bullshit that they were going through in their lives. So I'm really proud of that, and you know, now I got to say, okay, yeah, I was doing a good thing.
Absolutely. And you look at the impact that you had in the WWF, WWE. You know, I not blowing smoke up your ass. I mean, I think you breathed new life into that whole company, and just giving that whole, you know, middle fingers up, drinking the beer feel that Vince wouldn't do before that. You know, I mean, if you remember, like, back in 1990 when I first went there, Vince wouldn't allow anything like that. We're the straight and narrow company, and we don't cuss, and we don't this and that. And you came in and just breathed such life into that company. And, you know, I used to sit and watch. That was the last I watched Monday Night Raw, by the way. It was like the Attitude Era and that time frame. I catch it sporadically now, but you know, I was watching and just sit back and just, you know, really enjoy it. You know, A, seeing you do so well and seeing the company do so well and see the business doing so well for all the boys, and then looking at the fans and seeing those fans, you know, just like you did the other day with the fans, you know, that were in your line before you started, you know, reading the rules to them, and them, you know, interacting with you like it was a promo clip on, you know, for the WWE. That's what tells you you had real impact and real lasting staying power. You know, that these fans can remember specific promos and, you know, start, you know, people come to the table and they'll start saying something to me. I'm saying, like, what the hell are they talking about? Doesn't make sense. And then you realize they're repeating some promo you did 20 years ago verbatim. And I'm thinking, like, that's just crazy to me. Or, I know you've had to have this one happen. How many times have you had somebody come up and see, like, their whole back tattooed with your face on it, or your tattoo, your face on their arm, or something? Have you had that happen yet?
Man, I had a couple of people roll up their sleeves, to triceps, shoulders. I remember a couple of, you know, females back in the day would have it right above the belt line. I'll refrain from saying the phrase. And the skulls. I mean, we'd be leaving the building, man. Be some girl with kind of her shirt lifted up a little bit, and you could see that skull. I mean, it was very flattering.
Yeah.
I would never, you know, tell someone to go do that, but, oh, man, it's pretty damn cool when you see it. Hey, here's one thing you just brought up that I want to kind of touch back upon. Going going back to like when you were in the first phase of WWF back in the day and then getting out of it, whatever your memories of that are. But, you know, there seems to be these periods or cycles, and specifically now with all the corporate structure and sponsors and being a publicly traded company, you had those phases like, you know, when you were there, I mean, you were really restricted or micromanaged as to what you could or could not do. And maybe things loosened up a little bit when I got there and I just started taking chances. And now, you know, in today's scene, very micromanaged. I mean, this is not an indictment. This is just calling it for what it is, and pretty scripted, and you know, lacking, you know, frankly speaking, lacking some of the spontaneity that could happen in any other era, not specifically Attitude Era, but, you know, what are your thoughts as, you know, some of the periods that you went through when you were micromanaged? And then, of course, you know, hell, we just go to Eastern Championship Wrestling or Extreme Championship Wrestling. Man, when you really got a chance to let your hair down, really create that character, the franchise, and just go, you know, like A+, 10, you know, on a 1 to 10, 9 and 10 type promos, and have that creative freedom. So what are your thoughts on just, you know, being handcuffed and then being unrestricted?
You hit the nail right on the head with everything you just said. Like, for me, the first time I was in WWF in 1990, I went in, there was no promise of position or anything, and so it was pretty light stress. You know, there wasn't much stress, but I got to work with some great guys. You know, Haku, I worked with a ton on a night-to-night basis, Black Bart, I had a lot of guys, great guys that I worked with, and, you know, did a lot of traveling with Sean and Marty and Dustin. It was a great time, but, you know, I was also, it still felt in my head anyway, like I was still a kid coming up. Remember the last time we spoke, you and I both agreed it took about 7 years to really get our sea legs, and that was right about my seventh year, so 7.5 year or whatever. And so I was still in that phase of listening to what they were telling me to do and following their lead, that sort of thing. But, you know, I had a great, my first time in WWF was, you know, like I said, I enjoyed it. The only reason I left was my dad had gotten sick and I had to go home and take care of my dad. But, you know, then from back to WCW and the same micromanagement there, you know, it was Ricky Steamboat's partner and following his lead in mostly everything. And then, you know, the match we had, of course, you were still in that corporate structure and, you know, 30-second promo where you really can't say anything as a tag team. And then go to this place, ECW. And the first night I was there, Paul gives me the microphone on the segment and says, a 5-minute promo. I said, what do you want me to say? And he said, whatever you want. And I thought, wow, that's different, you know.
That's a breath of fresh air, because you're taken aback by what you really want me to say what I feel and want to.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, then that whole character sort of stemmed from that, you know. And that's what I say, Steve, about this the teleprompter stuff today. Look, you and I were both known as being good on the stick. But if I would write a promo for you, invariably it would come across sounding a little bit like me, no matter how hard I try to make it sound like Steve Austin, and vice versa. You know, and we didn't come into the business with that ability. If you go back and look at some of my early promos in UWF and stuff, they were real stinkeroos. But, you know, you have to learn that every much as you have to learn how to take a bump and do a spot and chain wrestle and timing and all of that. That's another piece that I think needs to be learned. Where I think it takes a real detriment, like I said, not an indictment, it's a commentary. For me, the franchise character stemmed from those promos. So speaking this guy out in my head for how many years now, I can tell you what kind of beer he would drink, what kind of women he would pick up, how he'd vote in a presidential election, this fictional character, because I've voiced him out all those times, all those years. But if I was always reading a teleprompter that, say, Paul had written for me, if you asked me any of those questions, I would say, what does the script say? And as a result, not really getting to learn my character is driven by what you're writing for me. As opposed to, you know, we talked about Steve, you know, the Stone Cold character before, you know, after the Ringmaster gimmick, you know, and just you hold those two characters up to a light. And one is just compelling as hell, and the other one is sort of generic, you know, sort of like a blob. Same for Shane Douglas becoming the franchise. You know, one's just a blonde guy that can go out there and do some stuff. The franchise is a completely different. For me, it allowed me to focus my energy completely in one direction. I knew exactly. I could see this guy clearly in my head. And that's where I think they're doing the kids a real disservice today. Take the teleprompter away. Force the kids to learn their craft. Some of them will be very good at it. Some of them will be good at it. And some of them won't be that good at it. But the ones that are very good at it will become incredible. And allow them all to learn their character along the way. I don't know how I know I could have never created the franchise character in that, but I don't know what would that character have become if it was just teleprompter and scripted to me the entire time.
Well, yeah, and to your point, going back, I mean, when you're in the driver's seat, you know exactly, you know, who and what you are, what you would say, what you feel, and when someone else is handing you something, Some of them can play the part pretty good, but I believe, like you said, you will reach a higher level if it's all within you. And yeah, someone can definitely chip you ideas, give you some bullet points, but sure, as long as that character, what we're doing is working, but as a shoot to you, because dude, I can tell you, you know, when I look back and watch you at ECW, I mean, it looked like 100% shoot. And the same thing when Stone Cold was talking in WWF/E, total shoot. I mean, yeah, it's a work, but I'm shooting. I believe 125%. I'm committed to what we're doing in the mission. But if I had it all fed to me, and I'm trying to remember it, especially a 3 to 5 minute promo when I'm just out spitting out verbiage, which that verbiage doesn't have any salt and pepper on it, doesn't mean jack shit, quite frankly. Someone might be able to pull it off, just make a string of 5 minute promos. But if they don't have a bottom line and get to the point, agitate someone, get yourself over or your opponent over, tell the story of the consequences to happen, how much you value that belt or your position, you know, it's just, to me, you're just flapping your gums and it don't mean nothing. It's white noise and nobody cares. And like I was talking with Kenny Omega, you know, we were just sitting in a room. He was eating his lunch, been working his ass off the entire weekend. And as athletic as that guy is, he's trying to become even more character-based because he wants people to buy in and care. So, you know, he can do all the wonderful athletic stuff, but, you know, he's still working hard, but he continues to evolve and work smarter as he's working hard.
Yeah, but it's brilliant on his part to do that because, you know, there's going to come a time in the not-too-distant future where as age creeps up on him, 40, 45 years old, whatever it is, that he'll not be able to do those kind of big bumps and stuff, and he'll genuinely value that he took the time now to focus on being able to then put more parameter to the character, because the character is what sells. I mean, you know, you can go to some of these indie shows and say you see a honky tonk man. Honky's not a, you know, let's face it, 30 years ago, honky was not a bumping machine. But he could go out there and entertain the crowd and go out there today and do the same thing. And if he takes a bump, he takes a bump. But it's everything is so well positioned with everything else that's going on in the match that it means something. You know, I'm impressed to hear that a kid like Kenny Omega at this stage is still as young as he is focusing on doing that. He must have been a lot smarter at that age than I was.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. Here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Putting your floor mat under your tires in the winter can help your car get out of the snow. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. Keeping a Dixie cup of water in your car to put your cigarettes in is a better option than throwing them out the window. Hello. Ready for one more tip you might not know about? TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar ain't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to GEICO.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
What's it like for you watching games of your son coaching?
Agonizing.
It's a family affair on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
You know, I didn't know there was actual work here.
Recent guests include Rich Eisen, John Harbaugh, Judge Judy, and John Madden.
I thought one of the greatest jobs in coaching in the NFL was Jim's first year with the 49ers.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet. Get episodes every Tuesday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
Great time to be a Wolverine.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Here's a question. As you were talking about Bill Watts a while ago, I was trying to round him up to do a podcast while we were there in New Orleans. And I knew, you know, the shit would hit the fan. And it always sounds good. You want to talk to someone in person. I'd love to be talking to you in person right now. But anyway, so trying to round up Bill. I've got his phone number. I'm going to do a podcast with him in the future because we got so busy there. But I want to ask you because, you know, I know he was instrumental in your career in Mid-South. And then you work for him there. And he's one of the brightest minds in the history of the business. And what a roster you guys had back then. One of the most stacked rosters, in my opinion, in the history of the business. And it was my favorite territory right there with NWA, mid-80s. And then you were around NWCW when he came in, rescinded the top rope rule, took away the mats around the ring. And I guess you were there, if I'm right, when he came through for a stop in WWF, correct? So how did the man change? And because a lot of people would say, not so much, I don't know about Bill, but with Ole, that the wrestling business, or maybe it passed him by, or he was a little bit too rooted in the old school. And I'm an Ole fan. I always got along with Ole. But what are your thoughts as you dealt with Bill, three different levels of your career and his, and through the structure of the business, the world of the business? How did he change, and what did you gain or gather from him?
Well, you know, as a young, snot-nosed kid that didn't know anything, basically, I got to put my boots on and take a bump. One in there, you know, Bill was very intimidating in UWF. You know, he was a big guy, 6'3", 6'4", you know, 320, 330, you know, big, soft, you know, meat hook hands. And you know, I was about 205 at the time, and, you know, I was taught to keep my mouth shut and eyes and ears open, so anything I did, I was told to do. And the first night I worked with Eddie Gilbert, you know, of course, Eddie called the entire match. When I came back to the curtain, it was the first time I did a TV taping that in a position, you know, not doing jobs. And I came back and it felt like a good match to me, not that I knew what a good match was or didn't know then. And I came to the curtain taking my tape off and I looked up ahead. Bill Watts was standing about 15 feet ahead of me by the dressing room door with his hands on his hip, you know, leaning to one side like with that pissed off look on his face. And, you know, a little bit intimidating. As I walked toward him, he said, what the, I gave him a heads up, like, hey, what's up? And I went to walk past him and said, what the hell was that? And I stopped dead in my tracks. I'm thinking in my head, like, is he serious? And I thought, well, it's my first night in, he's ribbing me. So I smiled. I was going to say, nice rib. I never got a syllable out. As soon as I cracked that smile, that big bastard came at me, had me against the wall, poking me in the chest, spitting in my face. Don't you? But I picked it up immediately. He wasn't screaming, you piece of shit, you suck, blah, blah, blah. It was, don't ever turn your fucking back to the camera. And, you know, and he's barking instructions at me. I got it. I didn't like it, but I got it. And WCW, you know, when we were there together, he was not that extreme. He was a lot more mellow than that, but he could blow a gasket a little here and there if the wind hit him right. And then in WWF that last time, he seemed like he had really curtailed all of that. Like he was, I think Bill understood that he was fitting more into a corporate structure and this wasn't his game anymore. I think he tried to bring some of that game to WCW and, got beat down a little bit for it and beaten up a little bit for it. And when he went to WWF, he realized, you know, Vince is the boss and sort of tried to fit into that corporate structure that way. But to me, Bill's always had like such a genuinely creative mind. And what I always appreciated about Bill was that he's fervent in the idea that the heels have to have heat. And he always built strong heel stables and strong the heel side of his card so that the baby faces were always chasing. And probably in large part because that's where I broke in, that's much akin to how my philosophy is today. I really believe that heels have to have heat.
Do you think that it's still possible for heels to have white hot heat as they did back in the territory days or even 10 years ago? 15 years ago. Let me go back a little bit further than that. Yeah. I mean, shooting heat.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's harder to do today, but, you know, you can still see snippets of it and little tinges of it here and there when something is done properly. You know, you can still get that reaction. Again, it's harder to do, but to me, I think we get caught up in the business. We, collectively speaking, in the industry, we get caught up in the, well, the fans know it's a work. And so, well, you know, before you broke into wrestling, weren't you pretty sure it was a work?
You know, I always figured something was up, and Chris Adams didn't smart me up until literally 30 minutes before my first match. But, you know, the word on the street back then was, you know, they're tapping each other's arms, or, you know, they're giving these subliminal signals, or, you know, giving each other the office on certain high spots, which was, of course, bullshit. I mean, you can give some guy the office to loosen up or lighten up a little bit, but you're calling in the ring. It was always a work. Of course, as a kid, when I was growing up, I believed it was 100% shoot. But when I was playing football at North Texas State, I was driving to the Sportatorium on Friday night, and I'd go back on Saturday morning for that television taping. And, you know, I knew something was up, Shane. I just didn't know what was up. And it's kind of like watching David Copperfield. We know he's not a magician. He's not making magic. He's an illusionist. So, yeah, but you know, I knew something was up, but I just didn't know what was up. And now, you know, the gig's up. Everybody knows. And I think, you know, the business is judged or even heat by, you know, no one watches an episode of, I don't know, current shows. So I'll use Seinfeld and say, golly, Jerry sucked in that one. The writing could have done this with him. But that's the way wrestling is being judged. It's being judged on the writing just as much, if not more, than the performance by the boys and the gals.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it goes back to the character development thing where, you know, if you're like the time you had Vince on your podcast, and you know, he's talking about reaching out for the brass ring. You know, we've all been there, and you know, you enjoyed a much different spot. But you know, when you're in that, especially when I was there in 1990, you knew if they said go left and you went right, you were gonna get your balls chopped. You know, so you get curtailed that way, and now if it's all boiled down, extrapolated, just all the writing. I'd love to be 20 years old again. Well, if I could wave a magic wand, but I'm glad I'm not 20 years old trying to break into this business today. You know, back to my previous point, you know, with the work. When I met Dominic in eighth grade, how I met Dominic was we had that backyard show, and we were approximating what we were seeing on television, probably not nearly as well, definitely not nearly as well, but we, you know, so I had a little bit different take on it. I was pretty sure it was a work. I didn't know it was a work like we do now, and certainly didn't know what a shoot or a work was. But like Jim Cornette and I talk about this all the time, you know, and he says, well, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And like you said, the cat's out of the bag. But when you go to see a movie, say Star Wars, and, you know, you sit back, you've got your popcorn and your Diet Coke, and you're watching the screen. Here comes the words, you know, the galaxy far, far away, a long, long time ago, blah, blah, blah. You know, you instantly allow yourself to go there. You know there's no such thing as lightsabers and mind force and all the rest of that stuff. But you love it, and you get into it, and God damn it, it's $1 billion worth of tickets. I think the same thing in wrestling. If we stop beating the fans over the head with it's fake, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake, is the camera voyeur, is the camera really there? We're overthinking it. Again, Bill Watts, it ain't quantum physics, it ain't curing cancer, black hat, white hat, that's wrestling. Just give it to the fans in a way. Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be as compelling today on television as he was 10 or 15 years ago. If you give him a heel to play off of, a great heel like Vince or whoever, and all it is a setup to that big kapow, right? And it will work every time. The fans will pop today like they did 15 years ago on it. I think we overthink it sometimes. And so, to me, I'd like to see the experiment just to try to take it back and just deliver it up as a valid product. Here's a black hat. Here's a white hat. Make the story intelligent and don't make it, you know, so damn elementary that, you know, we feel stupid that we're sitting there watching it. And if you go out there and do that, you still see the crowd react. So I think it is possible to get the white heat if done properly, but, you know, you have to work a lot harder for it today and be a lot more intelligent with the way you write it.
Man, we were over there in New Orleans, and I was going to get together with Shane Helms, have a couple of drinks, and just shoot the breeze. And I wanted to watch the show, so I took my laptop computer down there to the lobby at the hotel, and we were just going to sit there and watch it on a small screen. And one of the technology guys came by and said, hey, man, you want me to hook that up to one of the bigger TVs? I said, well, yeah, man, that'd be awesome. So he hooked it up for us, and we were able to watch the event from start to finish, and I had a blast watching it because I thought it was a pretty damn good show. Did you get a chance to see any of 34?
I didn't watch it that night. I was back in the hotel room. The entourage I was with, Chris that you met when I came over, the big boy, they were all down at WrestleMania. And so I got the feedback immediately when they got back. And then I watched a lot of it on the computer. There were parts of it that really impressed me. And then there were parts of it that really, you know, just scratched my head at. But you know, I guess, you know, like Bill, again, Bill Watts, right? I keep on, I find myself saying that all the damn time now, but, you know, Bill Watts used to say at Thanksgiving dinner, you don't want just a big pot of turkey, you want a little bit of everything. And so I guess there's some fan that probably appreciates seeing a 10-year-old kid be a tag team champion.
How are you able to watch the show? Because, you know, up until about a year ago, I would still watch as, you know, that guy who broke in the back of 1989 and got out in 2003. Now I go with it. I suspend my disbelief as much as they will let me, unless they slap me in the face with something that was, come on, man, you're killing me. You know, you don't have to tell me this. Let me get this on my own. But my point is, right. Dude, I'll just try to watch. And so, you know, that's what I did with, you know, with the current product, and try not to be so critical and enjoy it for what it is. And I can't be as much of a stick in the mud. And, you know, I like things to never change in my personal life. You know, I know the business has moved on. I know it's changed. The game of football has changed. Right. So has baseball. Damn near everything's changed. So I try to watch it for what it is and until they throw something at me that I cannot digest. But did you get a chance to see the Charlotte Asuka match?
I did. I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw highlights. I saw about 7-8 minutes of it. I was damned impressed.
Oh, those two chicks blew me away. I mean, I really like, first of all, I love Charlotte. I love Asuka. Really enjoy both ladies. But I really like Charlotte as a heel. I think she's a much better heel than she is baby. And the same thing can be said about Rick. Rick was a better heel than he was baby. But in this match, I mean, it was almost like, you know, heel or baby didn't even matter. It was the intensity that mattered. And that Asuka, holy smokes, what a buzzsaw. And what a, I mean, very, very good technically, and her aggression and her intensity. Man, those ladies locked up just from the first get-go. When they started going, and that one time when Charlotte did like a moonsault into some kind of submission that Asuka had set for, I really, really enjoyed that match, and I thought both ladies just shelled out. I guess I said it back on the other podcast. I'll say it again. I think that's the best match Charlotte's ever wrestled. But that one blew me away. But I want to ask you, did you get a chance to see the Ronda, Kurt, Triple H, Steph match in its entirety?
Not in the entirety. I say that on the whole thing, what I did was I had a friend of mine sent me like snippets of each match, like, you know, the bulk of the story of the match. So I was watching like 5-6 minute clips of each thing. You and I both have been in the business. Could you imagine your first match in being at WrestleMania in front of 71,000 fans and how many millions watching worldwide? I'd have shit a brick.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and see, Ronda seemed like she really did whoever was working with her, you know, again, she's got the UFC experience, and so she's been in front of big crowds before, so that part of the thing. As you and I both know, this is not an easy industry to pick up, and I thought she did a damn good job. You know, I liked how Hunter got in there with her and did some things, and I thought Stephanie did a phenomenal job, you know, in selling for her. You know, it's she didn't rush. I watched things like foot placement and like when she first came in and ran across the ring and hard weighed Stephanie in. It was fast, but she wasn't like tripping on her own feet. She wasn't taking unnecessary steps. She had it nice and smooth, so you could see that her athleticism that comes from the UFC and her judo background is she's certainly playing on, but still somebody's done some great work with her from the last time. The first things I saw her doing, she looked really out of place and uncomfortable. And I expected to see that at WrestleMania, and it looked like she'd really settled down and just got it. You know, it seemed like the light bulb went on.
Yeah, I thought she got it too. I mean, obviously, you know, the match was built to highlight, you know, Ronda Rousey, and of course, they did.
Sure.
But everybody played their part. And, you know, there was a couple of times Shane and I and the crew were sitting there, and we were right when you thought there was going to, this is the finish. This is definitely the finish. They'd go to the next level. And you're like, all right. I'd look at Shane. Shane would look at me. We're like, all right, I don't know what's going to happen now. Because I thought that was going to be the finish. They kept it going. But yeah, she's had, you know, great resolve and composure from her judo, all of her athletic endeavors, Olympics, UFC. But it's a different world. There's an overlap in some of it. But when you go to, you know, total shoot aspect stuff to work aspect, which is based on a shoot, but you've kind of got it down. And this being, you know, her first big dance, and this thing was, it was not called in a ring. You know, this was set up and they followed it accordingly. But, you know, if you get lost in the moment, Shane, like I was used to always calling stuff
in the ring and maybe having, you know, like five things that I knew were going to happen and then filling in the gaps. And, well, dude, it's like a lot of our tag matches we had back in the day. But if you're remembering something hard and fast and all of a sudden you forget just a section, well, there's that section you forgot, and here's where you remember, but that's when you botched it. Everybody knows. And so I just give her a lot of credit for being on such a big stage to pull off the effort that she did. And, dude, I enjoyed the shit out of it.
I did too. I was very impressed by it. But, you know, what you just said a second ago about how you, each time you thought it was the finish and it kept going, to me, that's where, you know, if Steve Austin and Shane Helms sitting there watching it can't figure out where it's going from there, then I'm going to take a wild guess and guess the fans can guess where it's going to go. And that's the sweet spot of wrestling. You know, once you get the fans going, the wind's blowing left, it's blowing right, we have no idea what's going to happen. Holy shit. That's, to me, what wrestling is always supposed to be when it's done properly. And that she was able to do it on that stage, like I said, I'd have a cinder block in my tights if that was my first match.
I want to shift gears for just a second because I talked about WrestleMania on my last podcast. I won't give everybody another review with the franchise Shane Douglas, but I'm on your Twitter account, and on Twitter you're at the franchise SD, as in Shane Douglas. I was reading some tweets about Perry Saturn. Now, were you guys in a fundraiser for Perry? I had seen a video a while back. Man, he was in a bad place, and I'm going back a year and a half, too.
Yeah.
Man, dude, you got an update about Perry or what you guys are trying to do, or is that all over? How is he?
From my understanding, I haven't spoken to him yet. The company that's doing that, the group that's doing that, they started this GoFundMe page, and I guess the GoFundMe page is still going. They've been working on a documentary, and from what I'm being told is that Perry's gotten himself back to a good place. He's working hard to stay there now, and so I want to reach out and talk to him. I just got a phone number for him like last week, so I'm going to reach out and talk to him. But I saw the same video you did, and I had seen him just prior to that, maybe 6-8 months before that. We did some sit-down shoot interviews together. Just telling some of the stories of things that have happened since ECW, since, you know, our paths sort of diverged. And, you know, it's really a harrowing story, you know. And we've all heard the same story how many times in the business. We know where it ends up 99% of the time. So when I see someone like Justin Credible currently doing it, or Perry trying to do it, I'm the biggest cheerleader in the world because, you know, the stuff, you know, we have people we didn't get along with, whatever. I've since long put that behind me. And, you know, I look at a point now where, you know, we're on the downside of our lots, right? You know, we've got more of it behind us than we got ahead of us. Hopefully I'm wrong on that, but I'm guessing I'm probably right.
You're right.
And, you know, I want to go out and to spend the rest of my years relishing my kids, seeing the sunsets and appreciating them. You know, as opposed to harboring some ill will towards somebody. So to see, and having been through that myself and knowing how difficult it is to get off that path, you know, I'd say, it's, you know, I find myself being a big cheerleader for these guys and hoping, you know, that they can ride it out because it's a tough horse to break, you know, and hopefully they'll do well with it. It really emboldens me and softens my heart whenever I see other people that have no connection to Perry Saturn reaching out and doing this because, as fans of his, they want to help him. You know, and I think I'm sure that Perry must be, you know, a little bit heartened by that as well. You know, and hopefully that'll help him on his journey to get well. But I just want to reach out to him and let him know that anything I can do to help him, any information, just to hear, to talk to, because sometimes that's what it takes just to get over that monkey on your back drilling in your head after that, you know, 5-10 minutes, whatever it is, come in the middle of the night, whatever. But, you know, we've seen that story far too often, far more than I care to see it. And I don't want to see it anymore for anybody.
Hey, how was it for you going back to your days of being in a bad place to be able to go to a WrestleMania 34 event, WrestleCon, whatever you want to call it? You were down there for the entire weekend to be around that atmosphere, because I rolled in. I've been trying to clean up the diet a little bit, but I know every single time I go down to WrestleMania, whenever I do go, it's going to turn into a party for me. And, you know, it's just a couple of margaritas, fireballs, or whatever. But I never really had any serious issues with any kind of, you know, painkillers, this, that, or whatever. that was never my problem or never one of my issues, let's say. I do like to have my cocktails, so man, I jumped off the wagon, was able to have a damn good time, and I would have had a damn good time without anything, but that's just how I roll. So I guess my question to you, and talking about Perry, for you to be, you know, where you're at right now and to have weathered that storm back in the day, how is that for you? Is it tough?
Not now. For about 6 months after, it was real tough. You know, you'd just be walking through there, heading to the gym, and all of a sudden, you know, that little tap in your brain. Go use some OxyContin. And if you didn't immediately redirect yourself and just keep yourself busy, but at 6 months, a year, year and a half, it became less and less. And the one thing I didn't do, and I still don't do, is because to me, that just seems like it's keeping the monkey on your back. You know, so you talk to somebody else, I've been clean for, 3,764 days, and for tomorrow's 3,765 days. To me, that keeps the clock ticking in your head. Drugs were never my deal. I've never smoked pot in my life. I've never, not judging anybody that does, but for me, that was never my deal. The OxyContin, I never had trouble with Vicodins, Percocets, or anything else. That OxyContin was a completely different beast. And I, got clean December 22nd, 2005. And I would say from probably a year after that, I haven't thought about it. You know, I didn't drink. I wouldn't take a drink of a beer or anything, even wine, for probably about 4 or 5 years after. I was, scared, thinking, well, it's going to slide me right back into that. One day, I just started having a beer. I thought, well, if I start drinking a beer and get that feeling again, I'll stop right now and never have another one. I can drink a beer, two beers. I don't, to be honest, I never did like drinking to get, drunk or sloshed. I just like, just to mellow out after a match or whatever. And, so I did it very cautiously at first and then realized it was the OxyContin. It wasn't the Vicodin, the Percocet, the alcohol, whatever. It was that OxyContin. I'll occasionally think about it, like if I'm sitting down, I'm going to have a third beer, say in an evening, like if I'm out with a bunch of buddies, what the hell? It's been this long and I've had no, for me now, Steve, the OxyContin is all, it has like a negative connotation, such a negative connotation. The divorce happened over that. I've been away from my kids for larger parts than I care to be because of that. So it's easy for me to put that stuff in a box and put it over there and say, no, thank you. It's a bunch of shit that I don't want to touch anymore. But for a lot of these guys that have, used multiple things, multiple addictions, and for long-term addictions or co-enabling, you're using with your wife or your girlfriend or your buddies every time around, like Axel Rotten did, sadly, to his end, then you've got to break that cycle. It's like the last conversation I had with Axel Rotten was he would always go back to his mother's in Pennsylvania, and he'd have no problem getting cleaned up there and getting well. And then within a short amount of time, he'd be back to Baltimore, and within a day of being back in Baltimore, he'd be back off the wagon. And I said to him, keep your ass in Pennsylvania. Why the hell are you going back to Baltimore? And he went back to Baltimore, and a month or two later was gone. It's got to be smart about it.
God dang, man. I just want to ask you that. I don't want to get too deep into it, but I want to segue real quick because I got a chance to pass by a couple of guys. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson stopped by and said hello to me. I got a chance to say hi to Bobby Fulton. I think it was the first time I'd ever met him. And, of course, Tommy Rogers, passed away about give or take 2 years. And I talked to him on the podcast, and I knew that he was in a lot of pain. But not to get segued on that, my point is, man, I just love tag team wrestling, from my time with the Blondes, with Flying Brian, wrestling you and Ricky every single night. I mean, and then all of a sudden we say, okay, man, we've been getting heat on Ricky. Let's get heat on Shane. We like the way Shane sells. And I got a chance to see Ricky Steamboat. Steamboat looked phenomenal. He looked younger than the last time I'd seen him.
He looks incredible, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's a good-looking guy. He seemed like he's in a real good place. But with you being your extensive tag team career and also as a singles run and a student of the business, due to Midnight's Rock and Roll, Fantastics, some of those smaller tag teams were some of my, and obviously you and Ricky were some of my favorite tag teams of all time. Who, if any of those guys resonated with you, or who are some other tag teams that you look up to this day as far as being some of the greatest of all time? We just had the Dudleys go in. I didn't get a real chance to work with the Dudleys. Obviously, they've held as many titles as they've had, so they had a great run, and now they're in the Hall of Fame. But what are your thoughts as to some of your favorite tag teams, because you were in a great tag team yourself?
Thank you. When I was a kid in the business, before I broke into the business, I used to, Dominic Nucci was a five-time world tag team champion, so I was big fan of his, and at the time that I started really getting interested in the business, he and Dino Bravo were the tag champs. So the whole WWF, you know, they had the Rick Martel and Tony Garea.
Oh, Tony Garea. Yeah.
And then once I got started dabbling into the business, I became a huge fan for the Midnight Express just because they were the Dennis Gondry, you know, because they were so smooth and fluid. And just watching them, I don't know if you ever went through this, but like when I was a kid, I used to watch those guys and think like, God damn, I could never be that good. You know, these guys are just like on a different level.
Yep.
And, you know, watching them and just the whole chemistry with Jim Cornette, the mouthpiece and everything, to me that was like, no pun intended, the total package. I mean, that to me was entertainment. And then like, after that, going to ECW, it sounds like I'm, a little tagline for ECW, but, I was the Dudleys, the Eliminators. ECW had some damn good tag teams coming through there. And, you know, Paul worked hard on that to make sure that the tag team division was as legitimate as the singles division. And that's hard to do in a company that small when resources are scarce. And yet he still did it. And, you know, you go back and watch some of those matches between those guys. The Eliminators and the Dudleys especially, they would go at it. And you'd see some great chain wrestling. You'd see the great high spots, the hardcore shit. It was just a little bit of everything. And you know, really appreciated it. But I've always been one that has been a big fan of tag team wrestling, you and I both had the opportunity to do that and really start to build our careers from that. But looking back at it, like for me, going into singles after that, I'm sure you probably think the same thing. You look back and think, boy, it was a lot easier then because it was only half the match was mine, instead of having to do the whole damn thing. I haven't had a chance to watch too much of the tag teams today, but like what I have watched, it goes back again. It seems like it's a little bit too formulaic for me. Yeah, like I remember Bill Watts pitching and screaming again. Bill Watts, right? You can see the impact. But say you and I were tag teaming, we both threw the guy in, and they both ducked our clotheslines, and we turned around and both drop kicked him. You know, he would say, "What are the goddamn chances of that happening? If it weren't fake, yeah. We both did. Both heels would duck at the same time, and so it got you to thinking in that vein of do something different. And then later with Steamboat would follow that same thing. You do a backdrop, I'll do a drop kick or whatever. I think today that a little bit more of that has been lost. I want to like just insert something here real quick because it sounds like I'm really critical of the business today. I want to make sure I underscore the fact that I'm not blaming the kids. We both were in that corporate system and know, especially when you're that kid trying to come up, you do what the bosses tell you and you should, to the guys signing your check. But, to me, I've always said, let the kids go. Take that teleprompter away. Some of them will become damn good on the stick. Take the agents away from laying the match, complete match out, and force the kids to learn their craft and calling it in the ring and adding some of the spontaneity into it. And just like back in the day, some of them will become very good, some of them will be good, and some of them you might want to get rid of. I just think that not all the pieces of what we did back then, even though the business has progressed, not everything we did back then is outdated. I think a lot of it can be reinserted back in today and have great impact.
We didn't mean to segue just into all of the great tag teams, and we only mentioned a few because, I'll go Arn and Tully. I'll go Arn and Ole. I'll go Rockers. Sure. Road Warriors. So they're a demolition. There's a million others that I'm not going to get to, but I was just going to ask Shane some of his thoughts. But as we're speaking right here, right now, we both got home from WrestleCon. What's in the near future for Shane Douglas? What are you working on?
Well, I've been working on, a couple of side things. I've really been trying to transition myself out of the business, but the bookings keep coming in, and it's hard to really balance both. You're trying to get everything circulating out, and getting that quote unquote your real world life started. I always say one day when I grow up, but as long as the bookings are coming in, and for me, Steve, it's always been about at this point in my life, as long as I'm enjoying myself. If it becomes work, then I'm done tomorrow with it, and I'm still enjoying myself, still having a shitload of fun and getting out there. But it's getting time now for me to wrap it up and look into something else. And I've got a few pokers in the fire, and hopefully have something here to announce pretty soon.
We were riding down the road somewhere the other day, or sitting around, and we were talking about Jerry Lawler. Man, Lawler's one of my favorites of all time. Yeah. And someone said that he was just working just a few weeks ago. Sometimes when I think as Flair wrestled until he was pretty old. There's a couple of guys that have done it. And sometimes, back in the day, I would like, man, why are they still doing it? But, man, I still love the business just as much as anybody. And I, kind of think, okay, if I hadn't got dropped on my head, maybe I would be taking, the odd independent definite booking, as, you know, just as well. But because of the horse that I was on and that horse got dropped, you know, I've kind of segued, like you said, you know, segued out of the wrestling business a long time ago because it happened a long time ago. But I think, you know, if had I not got dropped on my head, yeah, you know what? It might be still cool to go out there and, you know, tell a story, you know, work smarter, not harder, use the character, take the odd bump or two. Sure. Because I talked to some of the guys that are still making the loops, and that's what they're relying on, and they're all still having a good time. So it's kind of, you know, giving me a different perspective of still, you know, guys still working. But I don't know what your deal was, but, you know, I think I was just like every one of the other boys. I didn't have an exit strategy. Yeah. After 3 years of, you know, sitting in a, you know, gated community in San Antonio, I figured, okay, dude, the gig is up. It's been up for 3 years. You've now turned into a civilian. It's time to get back on your horse and go ride into the sunset and get your ass a job. So, you know, I was able to do that whenever it was when I came out here and started living with Diamond Dallas Page. But, yeah, I didn't have an exit strategy. Did you?
I thought I did, you know.
But let me ask you this. Do you remember the boys used to always say this? You get in, you make your money, and then you get out. That's what the boys used to say. You get in, make your money, and you get out. Bullshit. Once you get in, I haven't hardly met anybody that wanted to get out.
I was just going to say, how many people did you know that got in and, you know, it's one thing to gotten in and dabbled around the business and then got out. But once you started getting that push and getting, you know, I always tell people, you know, being in front of a live audience, and it's like plugging into a wall. It's got to be the world's most powerful opiate, you know, and I can only imagine at your level, of having worked at that level, to be able to command that audience that way. I saw an interview with Gene Simmons one time, and he said, you know, you get this feeling that you could stand there and just tell this massive audience, kill, and that they would go kill this person, that, you know, that kind of thinking, that just to have that kind of command in front of an audience is such a powerful opiate.
Hey, let's wrap this thing up. On Twitter, he is the franchise, SD. And anything else you want to promote before we haul ass and ride off in the sunset?
No, that's about it. Just next time I'm out there heading around the Nevada area, Nevada and LA, I'll give you a holler for damn sure.
Sounds like a plan, Shane. Awesome.
Well, it was great seeing you last weekend at WrestleCon, and great catching up with you today.
Good news. For the first time ever, the Adam Carolla Show is in virtual reality. Live Saturday, April 21st. Just a one-time $4.99 subscription, and you can see it on your phone or your computer in virtual 360 reality. You don't need glasses, only a web-enabled device. Experience a live show from the comfort of your own internet. It's not going to air as a regular show, so you can only see it in person Saturday, April 21st, or buy the VR download and watch on your favorite device. Get it at podcastone.com/CorollaVR. podcastone.com/CorollaVR.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Shane Douglas for being my guest on the show. And I had a good time catching up with Shane. And you can follow him on Twitter at TheFranchiseSD. Hey, man, ProWrestlingTees.com still has all the shirts I'm selling for the Broken Skull Ranch. You can go over to that website and you can find them, or you can just go to my website, BrokenSkullRanch.com, and check them out. We're going to work on some new designs because I've been getting some emails from people asking, hey, man, are you going to do some shirts for the BSR 2.0 over there in Nevada? Yes, I am. Stay tuned. I'm going to crank a couple out in the very near future. Hey, man, I always tell people, in life, you always need a pocket knife, whether it's opening up a box, cutting a piece of rope, or trying to save your ass. I highly recommend one every single day that you go out. Someone sent me an email the other day, man, why do you want to carry a knife? Why do you suggest people should carry a knife? Hey, man, like I said, you cut a seatbelt if you get in a car crash, you got to save your ass, man. It's just a good tool to always have with you, and that's just the way I look at it. And I think I got two of them that are high quality, that are very badass. You can check out the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the new Cold Steel Working Man's Knife, and you can get them in my new Amazon store. And Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or just go to ColdSteel.com and check them out, everything they got. And you can check out the Broken Skull Knife and the Working Man's Knife there as well. I want to say thank you one more time, or just say thank you in general, to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free.
You can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I'm going to kick this Cole's ass. I'll catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.